The Podium Game Podcast Division previews continue. I'm Brian Gibberman, here with Jared Dubin. Jared, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Looking forward to knocking out another division today.
Yep, and we will start off with the – we will do the Central Division. We're going to go back to the Eastern Conference. We've already hit the Northwest Division in the West, and we did the Atlantic Division to get things started. So let's go to – I think this is – I'd say this is the most interesting division in the East. Would you agree?
I actually like the Southeast more. I think this division has the two best teams in the East, but it's not all that interesting after that.
Okay, I see that. All right, we'll start off. It's kind of forgotten. The Pacers finished in first place in this division last year. They went 56-26 and lost in the Eastern Conference Final to the Miami Heat in six games. Head coach Frank Vogel is entering year five with the team. Their offensive rating, they were 22nd. Last year, defensive rating, they finished first. Pace, they played pretty slow. They finished 20th in that. It's a very different team this year as we head to the lineups. Roy Hibbert, David West, what we thought would have been Paul George and Lance Stevenson, but that's no more. We have George Hill. Where do you think they go with the other two spots?
It's a good question. I think Rodney Stuckey gets one of them, at least. He'll be in the backcourt with George Hill. Man, that small forward spot, I really, really, really don't know what to think. Solomon Hill, CJ Miles, probably CJ Miles.
That would make the most. Yeah, if you're gonna go with Stuckey at the two, you'd think you want some floor spacing at the three. You need some shooting there, and CJ Miles is the best shooter, at least the most consistent shooter out of all those guys, the most proven at the NBA level.
Yeah, I kind of like Miles. They got him on a good deal, but signing him to a deal that size and then signing the European guy Rudez, I don't know how to pronounce his name. That sort of boxed them out on the Lance negotiations. They couldn't go above a certain point before they'd go over the tax. And obviously Lance wound up leaving, which without Paul George now really, 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 really hurts them a lot.
I was going to get into it later, but in Bron, did you read Windhorst's story about the Pacers and where they're going?
I have not read it yet, but did that come out today?
No, it came out about 6 days ago. And
I have not seen it. I would love to see it, though.
Donnie Walsh and Larry Bird should be getting hammered for what they did with Lance Stevens. I'm just going to read the quick excerpt from it. The Pacers and Stevenson were just $300,000 apart per salary and year, and he ultimately signed with the Hornets for the higher amount. There was a dispute in terms of length of the deal. The Pacers wanted 5 years and Stevenson wanting to go shorter, but since the money was reasonably close, it seemed there was room to find a deal. If Charlotte had offered a max-level contract like the offer, that part doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. We can go, I'm going to the next path. But acrimony developed during the talks. The Pacers were unwilling to come off their initial offer, and Stevenson was unwilling to give them a final chance to match the contract he ultimately signed with Charlotte. After 4 years of relationship building that saw Stevenson develop from a risky draft pick to frontline player, it was odd and unfortunate that the end had an air of pettiness. At that stage of the game, there wasn't room for pettiness. Well, I mean, it's on Walsh and Burke. There's no way he should be in another uniform, and their stubbornness cost them arguably their best player.
Well, I haven't read the story, but from what you read there, then, yeah, that seems like the case, although I wouldn't say arguably their best player. I think Paul George was significantly better.
Oh, with George being hurt and him not being able to play.
Yeah. Okay, I think, you know, man, their calling card last year and the last few years obviously was their defense. Hibbert is, you know, the biggest pillar in that, obviously, as the rim protector, the guy that forms the base of their pick and roll defense. But, you know, a huge reason that they were able to defend pick and rolls so well and isolations on the wing players so well was because they had two of the handful of best wing defenders in the league working together and George and Stevenson. And, you know, obviously George Hill is a very good defender, one of the better point guard defenders in the league. Two of that trio are gone for this season, in all likelihood. So it's going to be a lot different watching them play defense without those guys.
And they also weren't a team, because of how the roster is built, that could afford to let any young talent go. They needed to hold on to Lance Stevenson. I mean, their rotation is being filled out with Chris Copeland, Ian Mahaney, as you talked about, C.J. Miles earlier, Solomon Hill. One of those guys will be starting. Luis Scola, Rudez, I'm not sure if we're pronouncing that right. Chris Singleton, Rodney Stuckey, and C.J. Watson. Like, there's no that core of as West gets older. I mean, there's no up-and-coming replacement for these guys. They needed their young talent.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, they sacrificed some young talent in the deal to get Scola, Plumlee, Gerald Green, and a first-round pick. So that turned out to be not the greatest deal in the world, obviously. I think, you know, also losing George and Stevenson, you know, it's not just defense and suffers. Those were the only two guys, really, that could create their own shot off the dribble for that team in any sort of reliable way. Obviously, they signed Stuckey over the summer, but Stuckey's not nearly the creator in terms of creativity and in terms of efficiency that either Lance or George is. So it's not exactly I mean, sure, it's a facsimile, but it's not someone that could just step in and replace right away.
Oh, and to that point, if you looked at Paul George's shooting percentages with Stevenson on the court and Stevenson off the court, there was a correlation. He was much better when Stevenson played, and that was going on 2 years of evidence for that. It wasn't just a one-year thing.
That does not surprise me.
Yeah, it was pretty significant. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. I used it in a story for earlier this year, but it was pretty significant. All right, reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. One of the things I think is interesting is I think we find out how – we all acknowledge that Frank Vogel's a pretty good coach. He has some flaws. Offensively, he hasn't been able to maybe get the most out of players, as we saw guys like Miles Plumlee, who he never really gave a shot to, and Gerald Green excel when they went somewhere else. But if he can bring this kind of mishmash unit and get them into like the 7th or 8th seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs, I think he deserves a lot of credit.
I would agree. I mean, I already think he's a very good coach. He's clearly one of the better defensive coaches in the league. Offense has been, you know, if not necessarily a problem, something that's been an issue, especially the second half of last season. I think only Philly had a worse offense than them in the second half of the season or something like that, which is crazy because Philly was not even trying to be a real team, so they basically had the worst offense in the league. I don't think that this year necessarily tells us how good of a coach Vogel is. I think we already know that he's a coach, and they're so shorthanded this year that any success they have in terms of making the playoffs is somewhat of a bonus. I think it might tell us more about how good Hibbert and West are.
And George Hill.
Yeah, I mean, I think George Hill, I'm sure his role will be expanded this year. You know, the last couple of years, he took a back seat in terms of ball handling to cede some of that responsibility to both George and Stevenson over the last couple of years. I think, obviously, that he'll step back up this year. He'll be running more pick and rolls. He'll be just came off the dribble more often than he had the last couple of years. He was mostly a spot-up guy. But I also think sort of his level of play, I think we know how good he can be, I guess, how impactful the player is. He's already been playing extremely good point guard defense over the last couple of years. It's not like he's shown the ability to be much of an off-the-dribble creator, even as he's been doing it all less over the last few years. I would think that his efficiency in terms of shots off the dribble and things like that would only go down now that he gets more opportunity, especially because Jordan Stevenson won't be there to draw the defense away. I think and West, you know, becoming not just different players, but players that are even more of focal points than they've been, I think the burden gets shifted there before it gets shifted to Hill. And, you know, if Hibbert could be a much higher volume post-up player than he's been, we need to start having a different conversation about his value that isn't just, wow, this guy really sucked for 2 weeks in the playoffs, and maybe he's the worst player on earth now.
Reason to be worried, how does Hibbert react to having more on his back when we've seen him, we've seen stretches where he's played really good in high-pressure situations like he did in, against the Heat for two seasons before last year, and then we saw him wilt down the stretch last year for whatever reason that was.
Yeah, I mean, people seem to forget that Hibbert was thought of as, like, a really good playoff player and a Heat killer before this season, when he all of a sudden completely fell apart in the playoffs. Like, we're not sure. There's a lot more longer track record of Roy Hibbert being very good than there is of him being completely incapable of doing anything on the court.
Storyline, do West or Hibbert get traded, or do they fight tooth and nail to try and sneak in?
I think if we've been paying attention to Indiana over the last few years, then I think it's going to be the second one. It's just, I don't think it's the personality of that team to let go of those guys and not try to fight for the playoffs.
They were able to transition from the Reggie Miller, like the late, mid, early 90s.
It took a while to do that.
But they never completely fell off the planet. It was like the Isaiah Thomas years when they were transitioning, and they were kind of like, well, it was like the same thing. They would go to like 38 wins, right? I don't think they ever completely bottomed out.
No, they didn't bottom out. They got guys like Hibbert and George in like the middle of the first round.
No, but I'm talking about before that, how they got from the Reggie Miller era to the Jermaine O'Neal era kind of thing.
Those eras sort of crossed paths.
A little bit, yeah. But they were different. They went from a different core. Like the last of that, I want to say that first was kind of the team that got to the finals, and then they kind of went through a transition.
I wrote about it last year, sort of how that breakup happened in connection with. So they played against the Knicks in what I guess was the first home game of the Phil Jackson era, and I wrote about how the Pacers rebuilt their culture and stuff after the Malice at the Palace. In comparison to what the Knicks would have to do under Phil. Obviously, there wasn't a big incident like that, but just the general horribleness of the culture over the last number of years. That was on ESPN. I detailed, you know, all the dates and things that what happened and when guys left and how long it took. It took a while.
Yeah, so in the finals, they went 56-26, lost in the finals. Then they had, where they transitioned, they had the three straight years where they lost in the first round. But it was a 500 team, two games above 500 team, and then they finally got kind of decent and went 48-34 with Isaiah Thomas in his third and last year. Transition to Carlisle, went 61-21. That was, I believe that was the, was that the Malice in the Palace year, the year they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals? Or was it the following year?
It's the following year. They looked like the best team in the league early on that year, and then they had the Malice early in the season.
Yeah, so they were kind of able to transition there without even missing the playoffs. Then after that team, they had to transition, and they had the Jim O'Brien years where they went 36, 36, and 32 before getting back into the playoffs.
Right, with Vogel in his first season.
Yes. He took over
like midway through, and they got the 8 seed, lost to the Bulls, I think.
Yes, that is correct. So the Pacers are at an interesting point. They're at a crossroads with where they go as an organization and how they build that team. One team that's trying to hit their peak right now, the Chicago Bulls, they went 48-34 last year but lost in the first round to the Washington Wizards. Head coach Tom Thibodeau is entering his fifth year. Their offensive rating was fourth worst in the NBA, defensive rating was second best, and pace they played as the third slowest team. What are your overall thoughts on the Bulls this season?
I don't know, man. It just so much depends on whether Derrick Rose is a reasonable facsimile of MVP Derrick Rose, or not. Like, if he's anything else, the entire trajectory of the team changes so much. It goes from title contender to what they've been the last couple of years, sort of scrappy, middling Eastern Conference playoff team that can maybe go to the conference finals, but doesn't have as high a ceiling as we might think.
Their starting lineup, Rose, Butler, Gasol, Noah, is Dunleavy going to be the fifth guy?
I think so. Maybe for some reason Kirk Heinrich starts again, and they use Butler at the three.
But yeah, it seems like the most reasonable thing is Dunleavy starts. Now, what they did that was interesting to me is they didn't really get any sort of insurance for Derrick Rose, but they set up their roster that they can afford an injury to Gasol or Noah, which having Noah hurt has hurt them in the past in the playoffs. He's always played, but he's been banged up. As we saw, Nene ate him alive last year in the first round when he wasn't 100%. And that's kind of a pattern that's happened throughout his career, that he hasn't been healthy late in the season. Gasol, they signed, hasn't been the same player. So having depth behind those guys with a guy like Mirotić, how do you pronounce his name?
It's either Mirotić or Mirotić. I'm not sure which one. I'm just going to alternate back and forth.
We're really not good with names on this podcast.
I'm horrible with how to pronounce names.
Yeah, at least one of us should try and be good at that. Ugh. But you have him. They got some shooting, which is interesting. And they still have Taj Gibson there. So they're set in the bigs, but they get Aaron Brooks cannot be your Derrick Rose insurance. They needed to do more than that.
Yeah, as deep and as versatile as their front court is, that is how shallow their back court is. You know, they have a lot of different front court pieces that they can utilize in a lot of different ways. They have the ability to play more small ball this year than they have in probably the entire Thibodeau era, if they really want to. Between McDermott and Mirotić, whatever. those guys can each work as stretch fours. And then Howe or Noah can both play center or power forward. Gibson can probably play both, depending on who's next to him. They have a lot of different options. And I would think that both Mirotić and McDermott can also play the three in the right matchups. So in their front court, and even Jimmy Butler can also play the three. And if you want to go small, they have a lot of different front court options there. But the back court, it's basically, you know, it's Rose, Butler, and then all of a sudden you're into Kirk Heinrich territory, unless you really trust Tony Snell, which it didn't seem like Thibodeau did all that much last year.
It'd be interesting to see if they maybe try and swing one of their front court pieces into another back court piece.
Who are they going to swing, though? Those guys all seem like guys they think are part of the future. You know, they signed Powell specifically for sort of a title run. Noah, obviously, is either their best or second-best player. Gibson is either their best or second-best defender and their sixth man. And then McDermott and Mirotić, they both brought over for specific reasons this year. I don't really see a guy they're going to trade in that front court.
I mean, if Noah's playing 32 minutes, I mean, and that's low. Gasol 28. So I mean, that's you're already at 60 minutes right there. You only have another 26 minutes. No, 36 minutes to play. And then you have
some guys are going to play less. I mean, they also have, you know, 48 minutes at the three. But guys are also going to get hurt, and guys are going to miss games. Thibodeau is going to run guys into the ground. I just don't think that any of those guys, I mean, maybe there's not enough minutes for all of them this year, but I don't think that they necessarily would want to trade any of those guys. They all seem like they're key parts of the team, whether this year or over the next few years.
It's a very talented and intriguing roster, the way they went about building it this summer. The reasons to be excited and reasons to be worried, we kind of hit on everything within that discussion, so there's no reason to rehash it. Storylines, well, what do you think this, I know a lot of it depends on Rose, how do you think Tibbs will take advantage of all the shooting he has this year. I don't know if this is something he's ever had access to.
I think he's got certainly more this year than at almost any time in the past between Dunleavy, McDermott, Mira, whatever. Howe and Noah can both step out and hit from 18 to 20 feet. If Rose has his jumper back from the mid-range, you know, to what it was, even the season before he won MVP, I'm pretty sure he shot better from mid-range than he did the MVP year. But if that sort of, if that pull-up off the dribble is back, that opens up a lot of different things in their offense in terms of, you know, more pick-and-roll play designed to score rather than just facilitate ball movement. Obviously, Noah and Howe are, you know, savant, genius-level passers from high post and low post, which opens up a lot more avenues to have two of those guys that are really good passers rather than just one. And then the shooting is a lot for gravity, you know. Guys have to be guarded outside the paint, then all of a sudden there's more driving lanes for Rose, and Jimmy Butler doesn't have to pass in his face every time he goes to try to shoot, and things like that.
Yeah, and Butler, and you'd think Butler would shoot better with this.
Well, he did 2 seasons ago. He shot, I think, like 36 or 37% from three a couple of years ago, and like 40-something percent in the last couple months of the season. And then last year he was dealing with the toe injury and the foot injury. There were different other kinds of Tibbs-related injuries he had for almost the entire season, and he just never really got anything going.
The team many expect to meet the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals, I would, as if everyone would pick their predictions, it would be the Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cavs last year went 33-49. They have a new head coach, David Blatt, entering his first year. Their offensive rating, pointless to look back at. Defensive rating, pointless. And pace, pointless.
Do they have any new players?
No, I don't think they have any. Starting lineup. So there's this guy, LeBron James, another guy, Kevin Love, and another guy, Kyrie Irving. They are kind of good at the sport of basketball. Who do you think should start? Who do you think will start along those two?
I would say that Waiters and it looks like Thompson are going to start. I'd probably start Barajah, but I mean, you're nitpicking it if you're deciding who the fifth guy in that starting lineup is going to be.
I kind of would like... No,
don't say it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I would like to find a way to get Marion into the starting lineup.
Oh, I didn't think that's what you were going to say.
I don't know if you can...
I thought you were going to say that Waiters should come off the bench and Dellavedova should start for defensive reasons.
No, I'm not against that. I'm not against that angle either, and having Waiters anchoring the second unit. But I do think it is smart for Black to placate Waiters and get him in a positive mind frame and have him start. I don't think there's anything wrong with the coach doing that.
I agree, but I also think that he should be the guy that sort of stays on with the second unit so he can get his touches and his rhythm, because he's going to be a clear fourth option when the starters are on the floor together.
Which, so they can make him be the first guy to come off and then have him come back
in.
Him
and LeBron with second unit guys would make the most sense.
Do you play small ball with the second unit? You use LeBron
at
the four?
Yeah, I would think that, yeah, use LeBron at the four.
So you kind of build, like, the last 4 minutes of the first and third quarter around Love and Kyrie, and then build the beginning of the second and fourth around LeBron and Waiters.
Yeah, I like that, especially because, you know, the Love and Kyrie pairing makes so much sense as a sort of a pick-and-pop, pick-and-roll combination. All of that shooting. And then you just try to create chaos with LeBron in the post and Waiters doing Waiters things against second units. And that's why I like Marion on that unit, too, because he can sort of combo forward where LeBron's in the post on offense, but Marion can play against the fours on defense to save LeBron from that physical strain. And it also helps in terms of, you know, the swarming defense. If it's those three guys and Barajal and Dellavedova, I think that's a really, really interesting lineup.
All right, reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. How good do you think this offense can actually be?
I don't really think that there's a limit. They have so many different options, so many different lineups they can throw at you. They have shooting, they have the ability to penetrate from the perimeter, they have screeners, they have pick and roll, pick and pop, isolation, post up, they have spot up guys, cutters. There's nothing in terms of skill sets this team doesn't have. I mean, they can get it all just from the one guy, from LeBron, and then they have guys that are so good at everything else. I mean, Kevin Love in a pick and roll, pick and pop, or post up, Kyrie attacking, whether it's one-on-one or off the catch or in pick and roll. There's just so many different ways they can beat you. It's even stronger offensive team than the Miami teams of the last few years because they have such good shooters and penetrators all up and down the roster, not just concentrated within two or three guys.
Reasons to be worried. The center position, as we talk about within the context of this team trying to win a championship, do you think Thompson, Varejao, some small ball, Kevin Love, do you think that's enough for them to get where they expect to go?
I would imagine that they'll work in trade part for a big man or for sort of a 3-and-D wing type guy. If they shore up the perimeter defense enough that the rim protection matters, that's another way to go. I don't imagine we'll see them play defense like the Heat did with all the crazy losing trapping, but you can do some sort of simulation of it by improving your perimeter defense.
And what Zach Lowe wrote an article today, it came out, that actually talked about that exact topic, and David Black talked about it. Yeah,
that, I wasn't around most of the day. I'll have to look at that too.
Yeah, that rim, they might not have your natural go-get blocks rim protector, but you can generate rim protection in other ways, keeping guys away from the hoop, using someone like Varejao, it takes charges and clogging the lane, that there's ways to get around, and that's something they know they have to deal with and that they think they have the ability to scheme around. Storylines. How quickly does it mesh? It took a little bit while in Miami. Do you think this process will be quicker here, slower? Take around, it took like, what, about 20 games for the Heat to really start clicking that season, in the regular season, something around that time?
Some people would tell you that they didn't really click until the playoffs 2 years later. They discovered that they were actually a small ball team. You know, it'll take as long as it takes, but there's enough talent there for them to win and win big, even if we figure out exactly what they should be doing.
All right, now we're moving from the two teams that we really think or they're where they want to be, to a team that's trying to start heading in the right direction. The Detroit Pistons, they went 29-53 last year. Head coach is Stan Van Gundy. He's also their general manager. It's his first year with the team. Last year, they were kind of a mess. Offensive rating was 19th in the league. Defensive rating was fifth worst. They played at a pace good for, that was 11th in the league. Lineups. Andre Drummond, 100% locked in starter. I'd say Brandon Jennings, I'd be really, really surprised if he wasn't the starting point guard. The other three positions are kind of open. Where do you think they go? And what would you do?
I actually spoke about this briefly with Dan Feldman on the Quo Vadis podcast that came out on Monday. I agree with him that Josh Smith is going to start because Greg Monroe is suspended for the first two seasons. The first two games. And so Smith is definitely going to start those two. And coaches tend to not really like to shuffle their lineups all that much. I think Jody Meeks will start. There's a reason they signed him, and it's because they were, you know, one of the four or five worst shooting teams in the league last year. And you know, even if no one else, Meeks has shown that he can shoot from outside, and they spent a significant amount of money on him, so I think that he'll start at one spot. And then, honestly, I really don't know who starts at the other wing spot, whether it's KCP or Kyle Singler or Caron Butler. I mean, we'll see what Stan decides. But I think that those four guys will all be in the starting lineup.
I'd put my money on Butler.
Yeah, I mean, that's a smart play in terms of where you put your money, I think. Coaches just seem to love Caron Butler a lot. He's one of those typical, this is our solid veteran swingman type guys who isn't as solid as people seem to think that he is, but is still fairly solid.
Yeah, he at least makes his three-pointers. He shoots a pretty good percentage from three. I hope Caldwell Pope gets a real chance this year. How little he played as a rookie under those coaches last year was really didn't make any sense that they didn't give him more of a chance.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing happened to Andre Drummond the year before. It's not a team that had been sort of rookie-friendly, which is a good thing, because they don't have any rookies this year, I don't think.
Who did their pick go to? Was it Charlotte?
Yeah, in the Ben Gordon trade.
And that turned into Noah Vonleh.
Vonleh.
You're Indiana boy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my brother and my roommate wouldn't shut up about him this year.
Did they think he was going to be really good? They were big fans of him coming, going to the
My brother was a huge fan coming in. My roommate, one of them is went to Indiana, and the other one, he's a Purdue previous fan, NBA, and he'd always tease the other one, like, where's Noah Vonleh? Why isn't he doing that well? So I heard Noah Vonleh's name about 100 million times in my apartment last year.
Reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. I'm assuming Stan Van Gundy has a brain, so excited. Death to Smith, Drummond, and Monroe playing together, who saw 1,360 minutes together last year.
They'll still play together because you want your best guys on the court, but I wouldn't imagine that it's going to be nearly as often as last year.
I think with their... They don't have another big that you really need to give minutes to. I mean, if you just take the 96 minutes and split it between the three in some fashion, I think you're okay. I don't know if you have to. I don't think you have to play the three of them together. You just have two of them on the court at all times.
You don't have to either, but coaches like to get their best guys on the floor. Coaches like to get best guys on the floor. Those guys will play together at some point.
I mean, 32, 32, and 32 is 96.
You're certifiable if you don't think they're going to play together at all.
What's an over-under on how many minutes they play together this year?
So much depends on health. And, obviously if guys get traded or things like that. I'd say over-under 5 to 10 minutes a night. So 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. Reasons to be worried. Overall talent on the roster is still lacking. Stan Van Gundy has a lot of work to do as general manager still.
Yeah, but that's not so much a reason to be worried for this season. It's sort of a long-term worry. There's no steady player here beyond Jordan. We'd all agree that Greg Monroe is probably at the end of the year. Smith is 6 or 7 years older than Drummond, so they're not really on the same timeline. Maybe KCP is the guy that you can consider one of the pillars of your organization going forward, but that's not your thing yet. So I think that the long term, that's a worry. This year, it's more about finding guys to fill out the wing rotation, I think. How those minutes are going to be divided up. And then whether or not Brandon Jennings can completely be horrible.
I don't think that. I think he will continue to be horrible.
I mean, I think he's still going to miss a whole bunch of shots, but I think Stan can turn it into a better distributor and floor leader in terms of getting them into the right kind of things at the right times.
Has anyone gotten more out of a good first rookie month than Brandon Jennings?
No. You know what? It reminds me of Doug Martin from the Bucks, where he had that amazing game as a rookie. Maybe against Philly, maybe against the Raiders, one of the two. But since then, it's just been terrible. Jennings reminds me of.
Storylines. What do you how do you think Stan Van Gundy can help mold Andre Drummond? What is he going to do for him?
Well, I think it depends whether they there's sort of two development paths that a Drummond, with his skill set and his body type and his youth, can take. He can take the Tyson Chandler path, where he minimalizes the things he does and just becomes elite at a few skill sets that he has. Shot blocking and protecting the rim, being a dive guy on the pick and roll, and being sort of a gravitational force that, you know, sucks defenders out of the way, but doesn't become ever a high volume offensive guy. Or he can go the Dwight Howard route and, you know, add a post game and a hook shot and things like that, and develop sort of other skills. I think that Chandler route is probably the one that makes more sense for Drummond. I mean, he has a couple of post moves, but he's not nearly the post player that even Dwight was early in his career. And he also has struggled with turnovers whenever he tried to pass. He had, I think, like a 3-to-1 turnover to assist ratio last year. It's not really something that's in his wheelhouse. So I think that going the minimalist route and being not a high usage offensive player, but an incredibly high efficiency offensive player, who then a really good interior defensive shot blocker, be the route that I'd try to go in terms of developing.
I think that's where he ends up. I don't blame them for trying to work with him and have him expand his game, but I think
it can't hurt.
Yeah, but in time they'll come to the realization of what he is, and there's nothing wrong with that. The last team in the Central Division, another one that I'm weirdly fascinated with. They're like my Minnesota Timberwolves of the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks. They went 15-67 last year. Jason Kidd's gone from Brooklyn to Milwaukee. It's his first year, the first person in history to ever choose to leave New York for Milwaukee. Good for him. Offensive rating, they were fifth worst in the league. Defensive rating, they were second worst. And they played at the seventh slowest pace. Lineups. Brandon Knight, Larry Sanders, Jabari Parker are the three I have penciled in. Do you think Giannis is a lock to start this year?
I don't know if he's a lock. I think he probably will. Him and probably OJ Mayo. Or maybe Ilyasova starts. I mean, I don't know. They have like 47 power forwards on this team and like 3 point guards on that entire roster.
It's a weird roster, but it kind of has some talent on it. It really does. Like,
it's one of those rosters that it's like, so like 2K, and you decide, I'm just going to strip my team of veterans and trade every cool young player in the league. This is the kind of team that you wind up with.
I expect Larry Sanders to have a bounce back year. I think Jabari Parker will be one of the better rookies. Brandon Knight's developing at a nice rate for where he was coming out of college. He's consistently gotten better. And then guys like, I mean, Jared Bayless is a legitimate.
I don't know if I'd agree that Brandon Knight has consistently gotten better.
You don't think from where he was at Kentucky to where he is now, he's a much better player?
That's not the same thing as someone who's consistently gotten better.
When do you think he was better than he was last year?
Yeah, I think it's been more fits and starts. There have been times where he's shown improved court vision or something like that, and other times where I'm watching him and I'm like, how could this guy possibly think that was a pass that should be thrown right now? And it's never been a consistent thing where he's shown it for, you know, even 10 or 20 or 30 games or whatever, I don't think that the improvement's been consistent. Like, I think he's gotten better since he came to the league, but he's gotten better at some things, worse than others, and with no sort of level of consistency, he's still a very inconsistent player that eventually produces around average production.
Okay, that's fair. I have no argument with that. Maybe I stated a point. I don't mind where he is in his development for the age of 22. I think there is some upside there, and I still think he might never be the point guard you want to run an offense, but he's trending towards having a legitimate role in this league if used correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's more of an off-the-bench combo guard type of player, and I've thought that basically since before he entered the league, but I think he can be a very good version of that if used correctly in that manner.
He's someone I would like to have a bigger point guard with that would allow Knight to play off the ball on offense and then still be able to guard the other team's lead guard. That's where I think he will eventually be his best fit, if you can find a Chauncey Billups type to pair him with.
Yeah, and it would help that that guy could shoot, too.
The other, I mean, so, and then you look at the rest of the rotation. I mean, Bayless is an NBA player. Ilyasova, Kendall Marshall showed some decent things last year. He's gotten better than what he looked like.
Kendall Marshall is a very, very, very good passer and is horrible on defense. Like, to the point where no matter how good he played offensively last year, it was still a minus having him out on the court. You know, even with his improved shooting numbers.
Did you like, they had two rookies last year that put up pretty decent numbers when they got a chance to play, Chris Middleton and Nate Walters. Do you like either of them?
I like Walters as a bad point guard. I'm a fan. Obviously, they have him and Knight and Marshall. And even Bayless can spend some time as a point guard. Not very well, but he can do it. But I like Walters as a backup. I think he's solid.
No, what about Middleton? Do you think he's a rotation player at the NBA level or no?
I think he can play in the right matchups, bigger wings, things like that. And he showed a knack for sort of getting his own shot and scoring last year. Anytime you have that skill set, there's going to be a role for you somewhere.
John Henson, I mean, they could throw out some length. If they wanted to play a Larry Sanders, John Henson, and Giannis frontcourt, that's insane.
They could even play those three guys with Jabari and then Knight. That's a massive, massive lineup.
I don't know if there's enough shooting there, though.
But there's so much length and athleticism that you might be able to overcome it for short stretches of the game.
Reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. There's a potentially bright future with some of the young talent that we talked about. I think it really comes down to the ceilings that do Giannis and Parker hit their very high ceilings that they do have, but there's no way to know if they're actually going to get there.
Right, I would agree. There's a lot of intriguing young talent here, though, between Giannis and Jabbar and Sanders and Henson. There are a lot of different guys that do a lot of different things in the court. And they're all really long and tall and athletic, which is an interesting way to build the team because the backcourt pieces aren't really there yet.
No, that's where you would think they want to boost, especially the shooting guard. There's nothing really there. It's a weird mix, and you talked about a couple of the lineups they could do. How this team fits together is going to be really interesting to see what Jason Kidd decides to do.
Yeah, I think that it's good that Jabari's already on board with playing the four, and he thinks that his best position is going to be as sort of a small ball power forward, facing guys up, working off against them with his speed and athleticism. That's something that the guy is compared to a lot. Carmelo Anthony has accepted in his 11-year career.
And a center like Larry Sanders is a good player to have that kind of small ball four with the way he can protect the rim. It's something that kind of mesh, that part could mesh together very well.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you could even use him against teams that don't have really bulky centers. You could even use him with Henson in the front court because Henson's a good rim protector, too. He's just so skinny.
Henson's a player I like. It just seems like he needs to have it come together a little bit more.
He reminds me a lot of like Brandon Wright, but 110% as good at everything.
I was gonna I when you started that I thought you were gonna say Ed Davis.
I think he's a little bit of a different player.
I was just thinking the long, lanky...
The long North Carolina lefty, I get it.
That never really got in...
But Brandon Wright is that, too.
Yeah. There's a lot of long, lanky players from North Carolina, apparently.
And all front court lefties.
Yeah. Roy Williams. Good job. Storylines. Is Jabari Parker the best rookie? Will he have the best rookie year in this class? Will he be rookie of the year?
I think he'll have the best rookie year. I don't necessarily know if he'll be the best player eventually when they all reach their peaks. Yes, he played out of position a lot at Duke, and that was part of why he struggled on defense. But I also just didn't see much awareness defensively from him. Obviously, a lot of that comes through studying and coaching, and we'll see if he gets better at it. But I don't have the same kind of hopes for him on defense that I do for, say, Embiid or Wiggins.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, is that he'll have the best rookie year, but in time he won't end up being the best player. There's nothing wrong with that, though.
I think he's going to wind up a very similar player to Melo throughout his career.
He's got his... To do the Melo thing, he's got to become a better shooter for me.
Melo wasn't a great shooter early in his career either.
No, I think he was better than Parker was, though.
Yeah, but the guy's young, and he's very strong. He can get his own shot. No matter where on the court he catches the ball, he's so strong, so well-built. I think he's going to be a very durable player because he's such a strong dude. Like, it's crazy to see him playing against those college kids because they just bounce off. I think he's going to be very good for a long time.
And if I had to pick one skill that an offensive player didn't have and they could work on and develop, I would rather them have to get better at shooting than, say, ball handling.
I think that shooting's easier to get better at, yeah.
All right, that wraps up the Central Division. We will be back with the Pacific Division on Friday as we continue the Podium Game Podcast Division Previews.